If you are ready, hear Psalm 86. And if you want to, you can sing along if you'd like, because this may sound familiar. It may be your song. Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I am devoted to you. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for to you do I cry all day long. Gladden the soul of your servant, for to you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all who call on you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer. Listen to my cry of supplication. In the day of my trouble, I call on you, for you will answer me. There is none like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and bow down before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name. For you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart to revere your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart, and I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me. You have delivered me from my depths of Sheol. You have delivered my soul. Oh God, the insolent rise up against me. A band of ruffians seeks my life, and they don't set you before them. But you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Turn to me and be gracious to me. Give your strength to your servant, save the child of your serving girl. Show me a sign of your favor so that those who hate me may see it and be put to shame, because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. I've been haunted a little this week by the line, save the child of your serving girl. Is there anyone lower in society than the child of a servant? When Jen and I were in college, we went to a class for engaged couples at church on Wednesday nights, appropriately titled Fit to be Tied. And we had different couples teach, you know, different sessions of the class. And so one Wednesday night, very well-known couple at ACU, came to teach, and it was just a fun class. It was entertaining, but it was also very informative. But I'll never forget this one class, because a very well-known professor and his wife were going to stand before us and talk about being married. But over on the side, kind of in the corner, in one of those like plastic chairs with aluminum legs that, you know, you can barely sit in for 15 minutes, much less for an hour. There over in the corner sat their kid, their son. And he did not want to be there. He looked like this for 55 minutes. Just like that. And you could, and they didn't have to tell you the story. You knew why he was there. He got in trouble that afternoon. He did something wrong. And they're like, "You're not going to stay home by yourself. You're going to come with us. And the whole time we're teaching, you're going to sit right there, up in front of everybody." And he let us know that he did not want to be there. And I'll never forget that image. And I thought about him, even in reading this, because I thought, in that class, with a bunch of engaged couples, listening to, you know, an old married couple teach us, you know, marriage stuff, everyone in that class belonged except him. You really didn't have a place in that class. And not only did he not want to be there, but there was no reason for him to be there other than, you could tell, he'd gotten in trouble. So there he was. I was in a beauty shop one time when I was a little boy, and I remember the beauty shop owner talking to one of her workers and just berating her, just talking down at her, just condescending as you can imagine. And the woman who was sweeping the hair had a child that she had to bring to work with her that day. Who knows why? I'm guessing maybe it just wasn't safe for the child at home for whatever reason, and so that child had to sit there in the little waiting area with all the expired magazines and the women waiting to get their hair done. He had to sit there and wait. And I bet he heard everything. Heard his mom being talked down to so that they could make ends meet. He heard everything. When I was in 10th grade, I took a class called World Geography. And there in World Geography, the first day of class, it was the second class of the day. Went to homeroom, I think the some class, first one, but I remember that second one was World Geography. And we walked into class, and because it was 10th grade, most of us knew each other. We may not have all been friends, but you know, you knew most of the people there. You know, it was a big school. So we sit down in our desks, and in walks Regina, pregnant. You know, of course, we're 10th grade. We're, what, 15 years old. And wasn't the first time we'd ever seen a pregnant girl come to school, but it certainly gets your attention when it's someone you know. And we watched for the next few months as her belly grew, and then she wasn't there, so we all knew, you know, that she had had the baby. And then one day, she showed up to school with the baby, brought the baby to class, and they made her leave And they kicked her out of school. And I didn't know Regina. We weren't friends. We knew each other since seventh grade, but I never found out what happened to her. But I remember thinking, I bet all she wants to do is just finish high school. Because what else is she going to do? But she couldn't, at least not like that, not in the late 1980s. There weren't things set up for that sort of situation. And I remember the little boy sitting up at front at, you know, a fun class on Wednesday night. And I remember the little boy sitting in the waiting room at the beauty shop. And I think about Regina's baby, which, I mean, that was 30-something years ago. Wonder what happened to those lives. And think about how society wants us to believe that there are no lower members than society, than the children of serving girls. And I want you to use your imagination, but don't use it too much. Use your imagination a little bit to think back to the ancient Near East and the world that gave birth to these psalms. What do you think serving girls did back then? Well, one of the things that they did have children. They have these babies. What's the world going to do with them? So we have now Bibles in front of you, and they're all in RSV, so it's all going to sound, you know, the same. You have to follow along. So do something unusual. I want to go back and read Psalm 86 again and grab a Bible, open it up to Psalm 86. It's almost smack dab right in the middle of the Bible. So Psalm 86, and hear this again. The first section, verses 1 through 7. This is somebody who is praying to God, and as they are praying to God, there are tears hitting their bed sheets, their pillows, the floor if they're on their knees. These are prayers that are prayed in tears. And I don't know if you have ever prayed to God while you were crying. But my guess is that many of you in here have. You have prayed to God while you're crying. And maybe you were crying because something bad happened. Maybe you were crying because you couldn't see a way out. Maybe you were crying because you could not possibly look into the future and figure out how things were going to ever work out. If that's the case, this is your psalm. These are your words. These are words that are like a gift to us that say, when you don't know what to say to God, here's something to say. Just the first section. Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I am devoted to you. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for to you do I cry all day long. Gladden the soul of your servant, for to you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all who call on you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer. Listen to my cry of supplication. In the day of my trouble, I call on you, for you will answer me. This is a prayer of faith. And it's a prayer of faith because it says, God, all I'm asking you to do is just listen to me. Listen to me. I know that you abound in love. I know all those things. And I'm going to say all of those things, but I just need you to listen to me. Just listen. Listen to me, God, because I'm crying out to you all day long, I'm asking you to save me, and I don't even know what that means. And I certainly can't see a way out. I can't see down the road. I can't figure out how all of this is going to work out. But listen. And then there's right in the middle of everything, this middle section, 8 through 13, that is just, it's just this beautiful psalm that just plops down right in the middle of everything. And I figure, how appropriate is this? When you don't know what to say to God other than, God, just listen. I need to know that you can hear me, that you're listening to me. You ever felt that? You ever felt that when you're praying to God and you think, is this doing anything? Circumstances don't seem to be changing any. Is this doing anything? And right in the middle of a prayer just like that are these words. There is none like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and bow down before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name. For you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. Teach me your way, that I may walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart to revere your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart, and I will glorify your name forever, for great is your steadfast love toward me. You have delivered my soul from the depth of Sheol. Teach me your way, O Lord. You know who prays, teach me your way, O Lord? Somebody who doesn't know the way of the Lord. Somebody who maybe went to church all their life, and then they look around at the world after all this time and say, I still, after all this time, can't quite figure out what exactly it is you're up to, God. So teach me your way. You ever feel like that? I look around, a lot of you have been going to church for a long time. Long, long time. I've watched some of you grow up going to church. And if you ever, ever, ever pray to God, can you show me a little bit more? Can you teach me your way, O Lord? Guess what? You're in really good company. Because people back in Bible times used to pray. You've heard that before, right? Well, I just lived back in Bible times. Oh, you'd be in the same boat. You'd be in the same exact boat if you lived in Bible times. Because you know what people in Bible times said? Teach me your way, God, because I just can't figure it out. I'm here to tell you, all this nonsense that some of you grew up with about, oh, leave all your cares and troubles at the door. Come in here, be all pretty, and you know, sip your cup and eat. Come on, man, that's not what people did in Bible times. People in Bible times brought all their stuff in with them and said, look, God, can you help me out a little bit? Can you at least help me figure this out? Because you know what the line is? Did you hear it? Right after, teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Again, what does that suggest? I'm not walking in your truth. Or it doesn't feel like it, or it feels like I'm walking in a world that is surrounded by lies. Sound familiar? It's nothing new. That's not a 2023 thing. It's not a 2022 thing. That was back in Bible times. People walking around the world saying, I just feel like I'm surrounded by lies all the time. I can't even figure out what truth is anymore. That's not new. This has been going on for centuries. And so what did people do? They prayed to God. I want to know your ways. Teach me to walk in your truth. And then, this is the one that's like a punch in the gut. Give me an undivided heart. You know what happens when most of us really stop and take stock and start saying things to God like this? Is that we realize, you know, this is not all God. I'm playing a role in this too. And sometimes, if I really stop and take stock, maybe I have a divided heart. And then there's these four closers. 14, O God, the insolent rise up against me. A band of ruffians seeks my life, and they don't set you before them. Sound familiar? And then right when they're still crying, they still insert, but you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. In 17, you know, it's, I need a sign of your favor. Those hate me, see it, be put to shame. You've helped me and comforted me. Man, it's that verse 16. Turn to me and be gracious to me. Give your strength to your servant. Save the child of your serving girl. I think if the Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael stories have taught us anything, if the Psalms have given us songs to sing, and if Jesus has taught us anything, it's that the notions that we carry around about the lowest members of society are social constructions that we made up. They are not in the heart of God. They do not belong in the heart of God. I understand that there are things happening all over our world that we may not understand. We live in that kind of world. There are children right now, children, little kids and babies, sitting on the Mexican border. And this is not about politics. This is about simple human compassion. I don't have a solution, and that's probably the problem, but we at least need to acknowledge that there are problems, and part of this is up to us. We, the people of Jesus. Well, what are we supposed to do? I don't know, but let's at least acknowledge these things. That there are no lowest members of society. This is a common, shared humanity. This is what we are to be a part of. And this is what we are to spend our time. I think this last line, right after the save the child of your serving girl line, is I think it is on purpose that right after that kind of final prayer of show me a sign of your favor. You ever prayed that? That verse 17? Just show me a sign. Anything. Just show me a sign. So that those who hate me may see it and be put to shame. I don't think that it's an accident that the writer of Psalm 86, whoever this person was, coupled the notions of hate and shame. But I also don't think it's an accident for us to acknowledge this last line as well, because you, Lord, have helped me and comforted me. These children of serving girls, we are praying for them to God. But if I understand Jesus right, what we are supposed to be doing is actually joining the work of God and doing the work of God alongside God. This is who we are supposed to be. The hands and feet and eyes and ears of God. So if we acknowledge that God cares about all of these people, then, to quote Jesus, let's go and do likewise. Because I got news for you. At the end of the day, when all of this is said and done, every single one of us within earshot of Psalm 86 will someday acknowledge that we, every one of us, is the child of the serving girl. We are all in equal need of this prayer and the work of God. So there again, to quote Jesus, let us go and do likewise.